from Irwin to Pittston, Sealands Grove to Greenville, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, this is no way to run a railroad. That's what business owners and CEOs from throughout Pennsylvania think of the state's budget process. Kevin Shivers from the National Federation of Independent Business is here to host a Capital Watch look at results of the Fall 2017 Keystone Business Climate Survey. And not a lot of attention is paid to Pennsylvania statewide appellate court judicial elections, but the justices and judges to be elected next month will have a big impact on state government. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. New statistics show the seven-county Pittsburgh metropolitan area has seen no net increase in the number of residents working in the 17-year period dating back to the year 2000. Dr. Jake Houck of the Allegheny Institute says this nearly two-decade-long trend represents a significant slowing from the 1990 to 2000 time frame, when jobs grew by 1% per year, with over 100,000 new jobs added during that decade. Most of the job gains over the past year have been in the hospitality and leisure sectors of the economy. On the bright side, real personal income rose by 20% between 2000 and 2015, although that increase was just half the national rate for that period. U.S. Senator Pat Toomey this past week called upon the Senate to pass a budget resolution, saying it will give the chamber the procedural tools needed to pass tax reform. Such a resolution would prevent use of the filibuster. It takes 60 votes to end a filibuster, and Republicans only hold 52 seats. A budget resolution would allow tax reform to pass on a simple majority vote. Toomey said the nation has been mired in feeble economic growth, and tax reform would provide relief for lower and middle-income Americans and also allow businesses to grow and add more jobs to the workforce. Pennsylvania Congressman Tom Marino has withdrawn as President Trump's nominee to become the nation's new drug czar. Marino ended his quest for the position following reports that he supported legislation which allegedly weakened the Drug Enforcement Administration's ability to go after big drug distributors. This was the second time Marino has removed himself from consideration for the post. Several months ago, he opted to stay in Congress, citing family obligations. But then his name resurfaced late last summer. Marino represents a north-central Pennsylvania congressional district based largely in the Williamsport area. Meanwhile, President Trump plans an announcement next week declaring the opioid crisis to be a national emergency. Read about these stories and more at patownhall.com. There was a burst of optimism after the presidential election over the future of Pennsylvania's economy. But a budget stalemate in Harrisburg and a lack of action in Washington have caused that optimism to evaporate. Those are the findings of the Fall 2017 Keystone Business Climate Survey. Here to discuss the results are Kevin Shivers from the National Federation of Independent Business, Matt Briette from the Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs, and Carl Marrera of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. Kevin?
You're listening to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg. For you, I'm your host, Kevin Shivers, Executive State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business, filling in for David Taylor, who's out on assignment. Joining me in studio today, Carl Marrera, Vice President of Government Affairs for the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. Carl, welcome.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and it's always a pleasure being with you fine gentlemen.
And joining me also, our co-pilot in the studio here, Matthew Briette, President and CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Thanks, Matt, for joining me yet again.
Hey, good to be with you guys.
And so it's autumn, and that means we're here to review the results of the 2017 Fall Business Climate Survey here in Pennsylvania. This is a report produced by the Lincoln Institute in Pennsylvania, and our listeners at home can visit lincolninstitute.org, and you can pull down the data. This is actually a data set that's been collected since 1994, and I think what's important about that, gentlemen, is it just proves to us once again just how old the researcher Loman Henry is, who's compiled this over the last several decades. So
I think he still uses like an abacus for this stuff, or you know
he's a
rocks,
stubborn yeah. fellow. I mean, yeah. I don't know if he's gotten into even the calculators yet, but back in the day when they started this, it was all in black and white. But what we did learn from the fall survey right now is. Gentlemen, the bloom is off the rose. Attitudes among CEOs and chief financial officers and other business decision makers, the optimism that we saw in the spring is starting to dissipate. There was business conditions when employers were asked in this fall survey, you know, tell us about business conditions over the last 6 months. Only 18% said things were better compared to 26% in the spring. 57% said things were the same compared to 50 in the spring. And 24% actually said they thought things were a little bit worse than they were in the spring. What do you make of that, Matt?
Well, I think that it's an expression of great disappointment. Here we are, you know, 9 months into the first term of this president with a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and expectations being, hey, we can get some things done. We'll take care of an Obamacare repeal. We will get tax reform. And a lot of these things, as you guys are well aware and the rest of the country is well aware, have fallen flat. The Republican House and Republican Senate have not been able to put on the president's desk some of these big ticket items. And I think that there were all very high expectations even into last spring that just haven't come to fruition. And so people are expressing, I think, that disappointment here.
Yeah, the Lincoln Institute actually captured that in one of the questions that's actually been a static question over the entirety of the program. And that is, opinions about the performance of various legislative bodies. And the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House did poorly, actually dropped from the spring with a favorable rating for the U.S. Senate of just 4% with 93 in a negative world.
That must have been somebody's relative, is in the U.S. Senate somewhere.
And then, you know, the U.S. House, 12% favorable rating, 84%.
Family members.
And that's a significant drop. Both of those were in the 20s in the spring. But Carl, that dour attitude towards elected officials is not just directed towards Washington. Seems to be also translating here in Harrisburg as well, right?
It absolutely is. But it's also not just in Pennsylvania. It is transcending nationally. I mean, the survey that we're looking at right here is just of Pennsylvania CEOs. But actually, the National Association of Manufacturers at the very beginning of October released their quarterly outlook survey. And when a similar question to the first one you talked about business conditions, the ever popular question of, do you think the United States is headed in the right direction or is our country on the wrong track? They're trending the exact same way that Loman's survey here in Pennsylvania is, that the right track. There were 46% people of responders coming back and saying the United States is on the right track, 21% saying the wrong track. Compare that to just the last quarter in June, and 56% actually said that the United States was on the right track, whereas only 14% said it was the wrong track. You almost have the exact same movement statistically in Pennsylvania that you do nationally.
Here we are. They let a budget become law where there aren't sufficient revenues, and so they're scrambling to find money. And they come up with just cockamamie ideas of, hey, let's put a sales tax on warehousing. Of course, Pennsylvania being a big place where lots of goods flowing in the Northeast, say, we can find $150 million. And not thinking about the impact that that's going to have on jobs, the economy. And when that dies, and they go, well, how about a statewide hotel tax? We'll double that, go from 5% to 10. Well, I mean, they're just looking for really, really dumb ideas to pay for their overspending in Harrisburg. And I think people recognize, look, again, Republicans have the House and the Senate by a supermajority, historic margins in Pennsylvania. I think they're expecting a heck of a lot more than what they're getting out of their elected officials.
And let's just take a look quickly at those numbers. Here in Pennsylvania, currently, the favorable ratings among the CEOs towards state lawmakers in the Pennsylvania Senate, 16% favorable, only 75% or 75% unfavorable. Pennsylvania House, 21% favorable, 75% unfavorable. You compare that to the spring, 29% of the CEOs and business leaders felt that the Senate was doing a good job, 32% for the state House here in Pennsylvania.
Cut in half for the Senate. I mean, and that's – look, they're the ones that are pushing a severance tax on our energy, taxes on utilities, cell phones. I mean, this is not what – people would expect coming from Republican majorities.
I think a lot of this directly relates to the budget. And in the spring, you had a lot of optimism going into budget negotiation. I mean, you were hearing that this budget was going to be done in early May. It didn't happen. Yeah. And I mean, you heard the we're going to hold the line on spending. There are not going to be any new taxes. We certainly aren't going to be looking at energy taxes. And it dwindled and it dwindled and it dwindled. And time ran shorter and shorter and shorter. And then all of a sudden, we pass a revenue package and severance tax is back on the table, and a gross receipts tax on natural gas was on the table out of nowhere.
There was a question dealing with were business leaders satisfied with the way that Pennsylvania state budget process was going? 91% of business leaders thought that this was a travesty, that this is not going in the right direction. Matt, I would argue that that probably would track very closely with just regular working families in the state as well, right?
Well, you talk to anybody across the state look, they're having to balance their family budgets, their small business budgets. They understand that you can't spend more money than what you've got. Yet that's what Harrisburg, 2 years in a row, passes plans without sufficient revenues, but nobody's putting the brakes on spending. Governor Wolf, the first governor in modern history, didn't set aside a single penny or freeze a single penny all last fiscal year. That's why we ran a $1.5 billion deficit.
The main point that I was going to make is when you look at this survey and you follow the numbers, it seems that the responders find Governor Wolf to be more responsible for this mess than they do the Pennsylvania House and the Pennsylvania Senate. I mean, his approval numbers aren't even close to the abysmal numbers of the Pennsylvania House and Senate. His numbers are 10% favorable, 82% unfavorable. That's down from just 6 months ago of 16% favorable, 75% unfavorable.
Well, leaders are looking for people to lead. And, the
exactly
governor
right.
has actually stated, and we have three straight budgets where the governor let them go into effect without actually signing them into law. How does that translate?
Well, it's the Pontius Pilate approach, just wash my hands, I'm not responsible, when in fact he is, because the governor is required to veto or line item veto any spending that's excessive. And while we, deal with budget deficits and debt, uncreditable, expenditures that we owe, monies that we owe. The real deficit that Harrisburg faces, you guys just touched on it, it's the leadership deficit. Whether it's the governor or the House or the Senate, nobody is willing to say no and to get our fiscal house in order and lead on it.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, Kevin Shivers, with Pennsylvania NFIB. Joining me here in studio, Carl Marrero with the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, and Matt Briette with Commonwealth Partners Chambers of Art Entrepreneurs.
Here's the big issue. you're looking at past business conditions. You're looking at future business conditions. You're looking at employment levels. You're looking at the budget process. Well, the conversation that's not being had under the Green Dome in Harrisburg is how do we grow an economy? And one of the big front page stories right now is this Amazon headquarters where we're having a Hunger Games like, you know, put a team of tributes together and put a plan together and send them to current Amazon headquarters to try to find HQ2. What does Pennsylvania really have to go to Amazon to say you should come here? What has
We have the highest corporate income tax rate in the country. We have the 15th highest state and local tax burden. We're not a right to work state. We have some of the most expensive schools. And
what has Governor Wolf done in 3 years to make the business environment in Pennsylvania any better and any more attractive for a company like Amazon to locate here?
Well, and what is fascinating about this is, you know, here we are on the cusp of learning whether or not Pennsylvania is going to be the state where Amazon locates its headquarters. And at the same time, the governor is calling for taxes on computer services and warehousing.
Third-party vendors.
And, you know, you think to that. And I guess the flip, you know, the rainbow and the silver lining in all of this, Matt, is – you know, I guess the natural gas industry can look and say, wow, the governor isn't just picking on us. He's an equal opportunity taxer. It's the goose and the golden egg. And wherever he sees a revenue dollar, he's going to go after it. But, you know, if you're trying to locate a business here in Pennsylvania and, you know, the chief executive, the legislative branch are seeking to tax you, what type of message does that send to an entrepreneur to say, hey, I'm going to go there?
Well, that's the problem. Look, the real Tom Wolf is from 2015. You guys remember this, when he proposed a $4.5 billion tax increase, larger than the other 49 states combined. Really, there isn't a tax that Tom Wolf doesn't want to raise. I think that you've got plenty of CEOs. This is why you're not hearing of big announcements of large corporations moving into Pennsylvania. I mean, I'll bet both of you guys your paychecks that Amazon doesn't come to Pennsylvania. There are more hospitable places for them to go.
Well, you know, here we are, and again, we're going through the Keystone Business Climate Survey here for the fall of 2017. You can find this information on the Lincoln Institute website, lincolninstitute.org. You know, employers in a dour mood about how the pace and the process here in Harrisburg and also in Washington, D.C., but you know, we always hear every spring about how the importance to get a budget done on time. There was a question that the Lincoln Institute asked this time. Do you think it's more important to pass a budget on time, even if it has a tax increase, or if it's more important to hold the line on spending, even if it means missing the budget deadline? You could almost telegraph what the results were going to be from that. But 75% of employer respondents said, you know, let's get it done right.
Just get it done.
Let's just not get it done if it requires taxes. Why don't we hold the line on taxes and let's try and find a way to fund the a state budget? And that correlates to another question because, you know, the legislature currently is debating a bill that would include massive borrowing from the tobacco funds and other funds in state government. And the question that was also proposed was, do you agree or disagree with a proposal to borrow money from future tobacco settlements to pay the Commonwealth and its current fiscal year budget? Lynn, you're taking a look, 80%, over 80% disagreed with that statement.
This is easy.
12 or 13% thought that it was a good idea.
I mean, because these are really, really bad ideas. I mean, they understand this. I mean, the governor, his alternative is, hey, let's securitize future revenues from the Liquor Control Board. That would give us, he says, $1.25 billion that we can use to pay off the deficit that he spent in 2016-17. So pay off the fiscal year 17 budget, but then have to pay it back over the next 30 years. So we're going to pay for the bad budgeting practices for 30 years to the year 2047 for the spending that took place in fiscal year 2017. I mean, this is you don't see this in businesses, and this is why you've got bad leadership, bad decision making, and why the CEOs of Pennsylvania. I mean, if they can move their capital out of the Commonwealth, they're going to places that are more hospitable, and it's only those that can't relocate. That are, trying to make it work here in Pennsylvania.
And in the survey, I think there were two really important pieces of data relating to future employment and future sales. And, we asked employers in our state, what are your plans over the next 6 months to hire people? 20% of these employers said they plan to expand their payroll, but that is actually down from 27% just from the spring. And when we asked employers about what do they think about their optimism for increasing sales, only 28% said that they thought that sales were going to improve. That's down from 47%. So when you're looking at a level of optimism, Carl, that employers have about how things are moving forward, it doesn't really give us much optimism, does it?
Jay Timmons, the CEO of the National Association of Manufacturers, actually just had a tweet the other day that really comes to mind where he said there are about 5 million new manufacturing jobs that are, just right on the horizon. Are you ready? And I'm not sure that the point of the tweet was really to say at a state level, are you ready? But that's how I interpreted it because of what I do and the policies that I look at. And Pennsylvania is not ready. We are not ready to welcome that investment. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done in order to do that. And the elementary, rudimentary task of creating and enacting a balanced budget is step one. And until we can do that.
Because when you fail to do that, Carl, as you know, it ends up you end up pursuing really, really bad policies because it's a mad dash to find cash.
You're flipping couch cushions and checking the coin return.
You're trying to find the path of least resistance. And the latest, it was warehousing, hotel tax. It's the natural gas industry. That's just a bad way to budget and create bad, bad tax policy.
And the Tax Foundation just released a study where Pennsylvania moved from 23rd to 26th. Some lawmakers might actually say that's a middle of the road. That's not a bad place to be. I mean, why are we even having that conversation? Why can't we be toward the top?
Well, and the only reason we're toward the top are some of the constitutional reasons.
Exactly.
We don't have
exactly.
a progressive income tax,
and
which
is the
states, only benefit we have.
The states that are at the top are the ones that are not overly reliant on any one industry.
Yeah.
They're not overly reliant on the natural gas industry. They're not overly reliant on warehousing or just your proximity and location to market. They have a very broad base, very low rates, but they capture as much of that broad base as possible. That's not Pennsylvania.
That's good tax policy.
And, as they say, if you you fail to plan, you plan to fail. I think employers looking at our leaders in government, very disappointed in their ability to actually get things done. That's about it for us all the time we have. Carl, where can folks learn more about you and your organization?
Well, thanks so much again for having me. And it's www.pamanufacturers.org.
And Matt, how about you?
Folks, go to facebook.com/Commonwealth Partners or thecommonwealthpartners.com.
And if you want to learn a little bit more about NFIB in Pennsylvania, visit nfib.com/PA or join the conversation on Twitter at NFIB_PA. So for Matt and for Carl, we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now a town hall commentary with Loman Henry.
In sports, sitting on the bench is bad. It means someone else is in the game. But in our judicial system, those sitting on the bench are the star players. The judiciary is perhaps the most powerful, most insular, and most overlooked of the three branches of state government. Like the governor, Pennsylvania's appellate court justices and judges are selected by voters in statewide elections. Unlike the executive, very little attention is paid to those elections except by party organizations and special interest groups. Voters in the upcoming November general election will fill 7 seats on the appellate courts, including 1 Supreme Court justice, 4 Superior Court judges, and 2 Commonwealth Court judges. There was little competition for party nominations in the primary election, and as usual, little attention is being paid to the races even in these last few days before voters go to the polls. Those sitting on the appellate court benches seldom get media coverage, and when they do, it usually involves a scandal. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court has been scandal-scarred in recent years, with one justice resigning after circulating offensive emails, one convicted for using her prior judicial office to campaign for the high court, and one who allegedly threatened to dish public dirt on a colleague. This created a rare three openings on the high court in 2015. Those races were swept by Democrats, reversing the GOP's previous court majority. Special interest groups, notably labor unions, poured millions into those campaigns. Given the Democratic Party's current fixation on so-called redistricting reform, the court now provides a partisan advantage when related cases inevitably land on their docket. And that, my friends, is the dirty little secret of the judiciary. It is political. The legal profession spins the myth of judicial impartiality, but from the Supreme Court of the United States on down, the political affiliation and ideology of those sitting on the bench plays a big role in the decisions they hand down. Generally speaking, the selection or election of justices and judges boils down to two types of candidates. Judicial activists who like to legislate from the bench and bring about social justice, or strict constructionalists who interpret and apply the law rather than make the law. Pennsylvania has seen its share of judicial activism. State Senator David Argall of Schuylkill County compiled a list of laws passed by the General Assembly and signed into law by the governor that have been overturned by the courts. Those laws run the gamut from how gaming tax revenue is distributed to amendments to Megan's Law to voter ID to grandparent custody arrangements. Some of the cases overturned are more political than others. The voter ID case was especially politically charged, as were cases involving Second Amendment gun rights. The bottom line, however, is that the courts have the power to undo what is done by the legislature and the governor. Some would argue, with merit, that is the role of the judiciary. Our founding fathers wanted three co-equal branches of government to provide a system of checks and balances. In addition to those running for election, two justices of the Supreme Court and one Superior Court judge are up for retention. In an effort to mask the partisanship of the judiciary, justices and judges stand for retention rather than for re-election. This means voters get no opportunity to consider other candidates for the seats, only cast a yes or no vote on whether the incumbent should get new 10-year terms. Supreme Court Justices Tom Saylor, a Republican, and Deborah Todd, a Democrat, are up for retention this year, as is Superior Court Judge Jacqueline Shogan. It is rare for a jurist to lose a retention election. The only Supreme Court justice to do so was Russell Nigro in 2005. That defeat resulted from voter backlash in the wake of the middle-of-the-night pay raise fiasco. By and large, our judicial system does work well, but it is dangerous for voters to fall for the lie that the judiciary is insulated from or above the influence of politics and personal ideology. For that reason, voters need to pay close attention to the retention elections and to the candidates for the seven appellate court seats up for election this year. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 22 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WFRJ-FM in Windber, WROV-FM in Ridgeway, along with WRYV-FM in State College, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.